Empower yourself today with legal knowledge and follow us on Instagram, Twitter, or Facebook to get access to jargon-free legal information in plain and simple English. Today's episode is supported by Red Bar Law, the go-to law firm for expert, efficient, and fast legal assistance, all at a fixed cost. Go to our website at redbarlaw.com. Empower yourself today and follow us on TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, and LinkedIn by searching Get Legally Speaking to get access to jargon-free legal information in plain and simple English. Today's episode is supported by Red Bar Law, the go-to law firm for expert, efficient, and fast legal assistance, all at a fixed cost. Go to our website at redbarlaw.com. With over 3 million downloads and counting, do not miss out on learning more about a topic that interests you. Go over to our website at getlegallyspeaking.com and browse over 100 podcast episodes. Empower yourself today with legal knowledge and follow us on Instagram, Twitter, or Facebook to get access to jargon-free legal information in plain and simple English. Today's episode is supported by Red Bar Law, the go-to law firm for expert, efficient, and fast legal assistance, all at a fixed cost. Go to our website at redbarlaw.com. Our episodes are free to access. However, if you feel that you would like to support the children's charity that we are raising money for, then head over to our Just Giving page at justgiving.com and search for Hattie Savari, where we are raising money for orphaned children at SOS Children's Villages, one of the worthiest children's charities. Donate as little as £1 for a great cause. Thank you. Hello and welcome back to our podcast at Get Legally Speaking. Our conversation today will be on a Premier League footballer, Paul McVeigh. For over 25 years, Paul has been an elite performer in two of the most competitive industries on the planet, an elite sport and performance psychology. As a Premier League footballer, Paul played for Tottenham Hotspur, Norwich City and Northern Ireland, and he reached the pinnacle of his sport, as well as being the first ever Premier League footballer to qualify with a master's degree in psychology. We are here to talk about the insights that Paul can share with us with the impressive career that he has experienced so far. Thank you so much for joining me today, Paul.
Pleasure, Hattie. Thank you very much for having me on your podcast.
As long as I don't trip over my words, we'll be all right.
Well,
yes, that's always a good start, isn't it?
that's always quite helpful whenever you're leading the podcast. Yeah?
Yes, which I'll go on a little bit more about that at the end, actually, because Paul has got a new podcast and I do want to speak about that. Actually, I will say that before I press record today, Paul and I had just been chatting away for the best part of 15 minutes. What an easy person you are to speak to. So and of course you would be, because you have been somebody who has done lots and lots, and we want you to share some of that with us. So let's talk about you as the Premier League footballer that you were, Paul, and that career. What would you say can be the biggest challenges for a young, skilled and enthusiastic Premier League footballer in today's age?
Wow, good question to kick us off with. No pun intended, by the way. I think that it's got to be dealing with the setbacks that are inevitable in a professional sport and career, but also probably dealing with the social media aspect of today and the ability that when I was playing, and you're talking about me being a Premier League footballer, and yes, I kind of ticked that box because I had about 20-odd games in the Premier League and scored about 2 goals. But, I'm not high profile. Probably most of your listeners would never have heard of me before. But it's more to do with the fact that I started off in an era in the sort of mid-90s whenever I joined Tottenham Hotspur, that when you played the game, if you played well, you'd get cheered and applauded by the fans. If you had a bad game, which happened quite a lot in my circumstances, you ended up, you got booed, people would be shouting at you, but that would be it. That's the kind of end of the applause or the boos, and suddenly they have the rest of the week and you don't really have any impact from the fans. Nowadays, one person does one thing in a match and he could have 20,000 comments of all the things that he did wrong in that game, not only just that game, the rest of the season. So definitely dealing with external influences and comments is a very, very challenging thing to do, I think, for 20 people who are playing in 2021. But ultimately, and I'm sure we're going to come on to this later, it's to do with the psychology and the mindset that really it's the, I think it's down to the fact of how much do you allow people to influence your mental state and your emotional well-being. Because that's something I learned quite a long time ago, that essentially my emotions are always going to be dictated to by my thoughts and my thinking and my mindset. So if I can have more control of how I think about things, then I'm going to be in complete control of how I feel about my life and what's happened. So suddenly you're going very quickly from what's happened in the football into my favourite subject, which is mental performance and psychology.
I mean, what you, there's a few things you've said there that just are so interesting, because, by the way, are we showing our age by saying this? But, you know, social media and online, life online, as I like to refer to it, is so out there, isn't it? It's so part of everyday life now, particularly as we're in the middle of a pandemic, hopefully seeing ourselves out of it, but more people are online than ever before. And back when you played games, as you said, if you did anything wrong on the pitch, or if you played incredibly well, or whatever it was that happened, stayed there. Yes, the conversations may have continued, in your case, in the changing rooms and at home, if you chose to, you know, have a conversation with it afterwards with friends and whoever else, and or in the pub, but that would be it. But because of the way we live our lives now, you can so quickly be reminded of what you're doing wrong and how you're doing things wrong, and the pressure, and it's almost like you just continue to get a beating, of things and highlighted points of what happened, and it can go on forever and ever because social media does exist everywhere very quickly. Everybody can get their hands on it. Everybody does get their hands on it. And I can just, you know, I can really understand the pressures that that can apply onto any young and enthusiastic person, period, yeah. Right?
But Hattie, that's the thing. It's like exactly what you said. The conversations that would happen, whether it's in a change room between the team and the coaches and all the rest of it, that's dealt with, and then we move on to the next training session. The conversations that are happening in the pub or in the cars on the way home after the game, we would never have been privy to them. But now you are. Yeah. Now anything that happens, especially if you're in a public domain, you know, you are privy to them because people can pick up the phone and send you a message and tell you exactly what they think. But I suppose what the lessons, and it was a really harsh lesson that I used to get whenever I was in that world of football, which is, you know, I can only describe it as ruthless. It is so harsh, and it's such a fast learning curve, and you have to be so thick-skinned so early on, otherwise you will just...
And at such a young age, really, right? Because most footballers that go on to play in professional football come into that world very, very, very young. Mm-hmm. It's such a young age, you know, in teens. That's really where it happens.
I left Belfast at 16, left my family and friends behind and joined Tottenham Hotspur, and suddenly I'm living in London as a 16-year-old. In the bright lights,
my
with
God.
No one around me to try and give me any kind of influence, essentially left to get on with whatever I wanted to do. So it is a really steep learning curve. But what football does give you is that very quickly, what people say and what they think about you very quickly just goes over your head. Because if you take that kind of abuse, if you take it personally, you wouldn't leave the house. And I've been really fortunate because I was kind of quite a popular player, not because I was particularly, you know, the best player in the team or anything, but just because I didn't get involved in a lot of the defend, and that's when things go wrong. So I was generally always had the fans on my side. But I saw players in my team who every single game, whether they played well or they didn't, the fans were just giving them so much abuse, you know, all the time. And I was like, wow, that must be so difficult for them. But ultimately, they were so thick-skinned, they were, you know, had such broad shoulders, or like dealt with it. But ultimately, that comes back to how they psychologically deal with people throwing abuse at you. Because really what you then have to decide is, how much meaning do I want to give this person? And I'll give you another example. In the middle of my career, I stopped talking to the press. And the reason why I stopped talking to the press, because some journalist wrote an article about me that I just thought was so far away from what I was actually doing and talking about things that I was doing that I hadn't done. So I was like, no interest. But also just to think that a journalist is good at English, why he's not an expert in football. So just because someone's writing something, the fact that it goes into a newspaper, a national newspaper, doesn't give it any more credibility. It just means more people see it. But I was reading it going, what does this guy know? He's not an expert. He's not a coach. He's not a professional. He's just simply good at English. So that was the psychological reframe that I gave whenever I was getting any kind of abuse or bad press.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt. Just hearing you say, you know, the fact that as a teenager, you left Belfast at the age of 16. You come to London, you're getting paid, you're getting trained, you can do what you want. It's actually, you know, it's a very, 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 very sensitive situation, I think, for any young person in that situation. And I mean, I've always said, and I believe, that with any sport comes discipline, the highest levels of discipline that you will find, because to be that good and to be, you know, lucky enough to be in the right place with it, the training, the constant effort and hard work has to go into it for you to remain there and prove yourself and excel there. So I guess it may not be totally incorrect to say that because, you know, if you're in an elite sport as an elite performer, then that has some kind of assistance in getting you to be this thick-skinned person that you're saying you have to be because of the challenges of having social media in this day and age being able to batter you in so many ways that it can, and so mercilessly as well. And I guess the skin just has to be even thicker now than ever before, you know. But yeah, I mean, as a young lad, you grew up in a war-torn Belfast, Ireland. What was it like watching the law take over your homeland, your streets, and practically your life? What was that like?
I suppose there's only one word that can describe it, and that's normal.
That was your normal, because you didn't know otherwise. That's what we're saying.
Yeah, because if you're a kid growing up in Belfast and Ireland, Northern Ireland in the 70s or 80s, there are going to be tanks driving down your street. There are going to be bombs going off on a daily basis. There are going to be soldiers walking past you with their M60, whacking it in your face if you walk past them as they're going to school, just because they felt like it. Because that's the kind of thing that happened on a daily basis. But because that's an everyday occurrence, you don't see it as any different. And I only got the comparison, well, whenever I turned up in London at 16 and moved to Enfield, actually Bushell Park in North London, and I'm walking down this tree-lined avenue going, where are all the people? Where are all the tanks? Where's all the soldiers? Wow. And they weren't there, because it was only in Belfast and obviously the issues that we had over here growing up. But it was only because you saw it every day. And then you'd carry on with your life. So I was going to school, I was coming back, I was doing my homework, I was going out to play football on the streets every single day, because that's what everyone else was doing. And as I say, the only way I could then see a different side of life was whenever I turned up in England at 16 and going, okay, so maybe it's not that normal for those things to happen.
Yeah, well, that's very interesting. You know, as you say, if you don't know any better, then you do think that is your normal, right? Whereas I guess it would have been slightly different if you'd moved from London or England at the age of 16 to Belfast. That Absolutely. Probably would have been a shell shock.
Well, no, both ways.
Yes.
There's a culture shock going both ways, because when I turned up in London and suddenly seeing every race and creed and nationality of people all under the one kind of city and the roof of London, I was like, wow, this is just blowing my mind. And walking down Tottenham High Road as a 16-year-old and seeing every single possible person on the earth all within a 200-metre period, I was like, this is just too much for me to cope with. So, well, yeah, both ways.
I get it. I grew up in Tottenham. The first 11 years of my life, I grew up in Tottenham, and I have lived in North London all my life. So I know North London very, very well. And I have to say, I've always felt like I've been very privileged to grow up in one of the most cosmopolitan cities in the world during my childhood, in any event. And I say that because on the odd occasion that I used to go over to South London, I didn't feel that it was so cosmopolitan, and there were so many different mixed races and mixed people living all together happily as they were in Tottenham, where you turned up as a 16-year-old and where I grew up until I was 11. And then we moved to Bounds Green. My parents moved us to Bounds Green, which is, you know, at the foot of Muswell Hill and just before you get to Palmer's Green. So I know North London really, really well. And I just can't even imagine what it must have been like to come from, you know, Belfast, because I've never actually been to Belfast myself, but I'm just listening to what you're saying. And from the little that I do know, where you've got, you know, soldiers walking around with guns and tanks and that kind of lifestyle, to coming into, as you say, Bushill Park near Enfield, Tree Lined Street. Everybody's really happy, getting along, lots of mixed people in from different backgrounds and races and things like that. And you just think, wow, that must have been. But I think that's the pleasant way round to have done it, really.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's the nice way round to have done it, rather than have been in perhaps Bushill Park for the first 16 years and then have to go and think, wow, what's Belfast up to and what's going on here?
But that also gives me a real understanding of sort of street smarts as well, of, you know, being able to handle yourself, which then, of course, once I started moving into the footballing career, you know, people constantly trying to get things from me and trying to, you know, take things from me as well as walk over the top of you. So it was actually really helpful to have both sides of the coin, that understanding.
Wow. No, I hear you. I get it. I mean, being the first Premier League footballer to qualify with a master's degree in psychology and practicing as an expert elite performance coach, what legalities have you been faced with? Is there any legal knowledge that you wished that you had looking back in hindsight? Because hindsight is a wonderful thing that you know, I don't like to use often, but for these purposes, I think it could make an interesting conversation.
Yeah, it is interesting, because I'm not sure necessarily legalities is the right word for it, but definitely best practice when it comes to. I kind of started off on this journey through this sporting career, and it was really by the age of 17 that a friend of mine gave me a book by a guy called Anthony Robbins, Tony Robbins. And I remember reading this book called Awaken the Giant Within.
I've got it right there.
Excuse me,
green cover, my one.
Hugely successful. across the world.
And you were 17, you say, when you
read
that.
Right.
You were about 5 years ahead. No, more than that. About 7 or 8 years ahead of me then.
So, and this is the interesting thing, that because I read that book, I would say categorically, my life went in a completely different trajectory because of that book. And as soon as I started understanding that life wasn't almost predestined, predetermined, I could start deciding, I could start setting goals for what I wanted, I could start trying to create a mindset that would allow me to live this life of what I'd always wanted, which is to be not just a professional footballer, I wanted to have a long-term career in professional football. And as I started incorporating things like visualization and seeing sports psychologists and all the different things that helped me, I believe helped me have a 20-year career in professional football, it started this journey that eventually, when I came out of the playing side of 32, so it was 2010, I had this real passion and fascination with mental performance and why I started working in this area straight away. But of course, I've only got the experiential learning of playing elite sport, playing in the Premier League international football, which is a great starting point, but no formal qualifications. But I started working as 2 years with Norwich City as the performance psychologist there, then 5 years as a sports psychologist with Crystal Palace. And it was only at the end of the last couple of years at Crystal Palace that I went off and thought, I feel like I'm still living off the kind of the experiential playing days, when I kind of need more of the theoretical, the academic framework to be able to pin all these experiences to. So when I studied my master's, that's really what I got, because, you know, I'm not an academic, probably the complete opposite to you, Hattie. You probably went through the entire academic system.
I didn't actually.
Did you
know? Paul, no, okay. I didn't. But that could make a very interesting podcast, you know.
Okay. But so I left school at 16, started a business degree at 21, did a sports science degree at 28, went and did my master's in psychology at 35. And it was at that stage where I thought, now I understand the way you should be doing this, as opposed to how I thought it should be done. So whether it was the legalities or not of it, it was starting to understand that all of the things that issues I was coming across, because obviously it's not just sport and issues, it's really about performance. It's how do people get the best out of themselves, and you can never just isolate the sporting element of someone's life, because what happens in their home life, what happens in their social life, all of the other areas of their life and their relationships all impact that sporting performance. So every time I'm having one-to-ones with not only just the players, but the coaches as well, it just cascades across every area of their life. And what I needed to start understanding is, how do I make sure that if there are any issues, and then whenever, luckily when I did study this, that I started being more tuned to realizing that there were some things that I just wasn't equipped for, and then I need to start referring them on, I need to start putting other people, because I don't have the answers for everything. And I'm very aware of that I have an understanding, I can maybe be able to help people with certain things, and other things that are above my pay grade, and I need to push them on to, whether it was a doctor or a therapist or whatever it happened to be. So that was probably the biggest light bulb moment for me whenever I studied my master's.
Wow, what an insight. I mean, it's interesting, isn't it? Because it's not unusual, actually, that people get into a line of work and a career because something has guided them into that path, as it did with you with your football. And then you kind of start running down that road, and life is busy, and we have so much to take care of whilst we're trying to run down a road, that you don't really stop and think, well, what else can I attach to what I'm doing? How can I enhance what I'm doing? You're too busy doing what you're doing. I call it a bit like the syndrome of working in your business rather than having the opportunity to work on your business. And, you know, I often talk about mental well-being, Paul. It's something that's very, very sort of I'm aware of. And I've also, you know, loved reading, and I still do read lots and lots of books on this subject. And it's we don't have the time, I don't think, as just individuals, as day-to-day life takes over, to even think about mental well-being enough to actually work on our mental well-being, because we just take it for granted that, well, you're either physically fit or you're not. You either do some exercise or you don't. You either eat well or you don't. But not many people sit there and think, what do I do to keep my brain in shape, to keep my thoughts as best as they can be, to get rid of all the nasty, horrible, controversial stuff that puts me into a sad place, or that can be distressful, or that I don't need to think about. And, you know, life is just so busy for us all, even for those people that might have one thing in their diary to do a day. There's stuff. There's just so much stuff.
So right? That's the really interesting, and without trying to sound controversial, I would like to challenge you on what you've just said there, because you said, you know, we don't have the time, and I would actually challenge that. I would say we all have the time. Maybe we don't take the time to decide this. And this is the difference that I've found between, you know, having met and worked with thousands and thousands and thousands of people in the corporate world over the last 10, 11 years, that so many people are busy. And I really appreciate that, you know, especially in your profession. You know, a lot of people are working 50, 60, 70 hours a week. You know, I see it all the time in your profession, accountancy, you know, engineering, all of the kind of professional services. And so few people actually take the step back and go, okay, I'm busy. But the question I'd always have, the caveat that is, are you busy creating the life that you've decided that you always want to have, or are you just busy? Because there's two completely different
scenarios going on there. I'm really glad you've said that, because you're absolutely right. We say we don't have the time, but it's about making the time. It's about taking the time. And so I will say, and this is, you know, my thought process behind that, it's priorities. Have we got our priorities in the right place to want to make the time? Because that's how life is, isn't it? It's like those long lost friends that live down the road that you never see because everyone's so busy. But it's not a priority to either party to connect and see each other. So therefore, you know, you won't take the time to do anything that's not on the forefront of your mind. But I have to say that there's a large number of distraction normally in any event. I mean, I'm not really somebody who watches much television, for example. I will be very specific about what I put on. I will skip through adverts all the time. And it will be very certain times of certain days that I would even get to watch anything. But, you know, the fact of the matter is that priority, being busy, and you said something really important. Do we actually choose to do what's keeping us incredibly busy and incredibly tied up and not enough time? And are we choosing, have we chosen the path? And most people, you know, it almost feels like some days that we're just in this position, riding this wave, and there's no outs. There's no way out.
There is definitely an out, and this is the biggest part of probably a lot of the work that I do. A, it's accountability, because what you're going is, you're talking about an external locus of control, whereas kind of it's all this stuff that's happening to me, which is generally why people end up going down this kind of slippery slope of, you know, almost feeling like they're not in control in their lives. And actually, the most successful people, the most content, the most fulfilled people I've ever come across don't think that the world is happening to them. They have an internal locus of control, realizing that everything they do, they're choosing to do because they're taking accountability for it, rather than this mysterious external force that's forcing them to do this, and realizing that they're deciding everything they do. Because, again, I've met too many people who think they have this obligation to do whatever it is that they're doing in their lives, until suddenly they'll sort of either come home from work and they'll either get one of these, and it's a little kind of tap on the shoulder, and it's like, what's up? It's like, well, that's their partner or their spouse or whoever. And it's like, I'm off. Where are you off? Well, haven't seen you for like 25, 30 years, so I'm off. Good luck, all the best. And if it's not a little tap on the shoulder, it's a little feeling in the chest, and it's like, because they haven't been taking care of themselves, because they've been so busy working on whatever it is. And absolutely, it's a priority thing. And without, you know, knowing your profession, I've worked with loads of law firms over the years and different solicitors and barristers, but I can't profess to know it intimately. But I would hazard a guess that a large percentage of your profession work extremely long hours and give probably way less priority to the well-being, to the fitness, to their external relationships and all-round holistic health. And to put it into an accountancy example, I work with I've worked with the likes of PwC and stuff like that, and KPMG, but one of the other big accountancy firms, one of the partners that has booked me about 6 or 7 times to deliver keynotes for them, eventually got this stage where he was working 60-70-80 hours a week until he just went and had the biggest falling off a cliff, just completely collapsed, completely burnt out, was off for a large number of months, until eventually he's come back and he's now the partner at the head of people and culture, because he realized, before he was head of audit, now he's head of people and culture, because he realized that's not sustainable. So everything that I've done with the companies I've worked with over the last 10 years, the MDs, the LD directors, whoever it is, always say to me, what the stuff you're talking about is so, so important, but how do we make it sustainable?
Well, that's it, isn't it?
It's just pick at it for a couple of days and then go, right, okay, that's me done, I'll pick that box.
And I think you've just raised something really important there as well, Paul. You know, we often let life happen to us, where we've got to happen to life. That was sort of my really simple way of putting things sometimes, when I sort of feel like I'm running really, really fast, and the clock's ticking, and everything is a rush, and you're not enjoying anything because it's a rush to wake up, it's a rush to do the exercise, it's a rush to get ready for work, it's a rush to work, it's a rush to finish work, rush to get the family sorted for the evening, rush to get to bed because it's really late and you need to sleep, otherwise you're not going to get enough hours before my 5 a.m. alarm clock rings again. And then you think, whoa, stop right there, because I'm not feeling any of it. I'm not actually enjoying any of it, and I'm not seeing any of it. So just take a step back and stop allowing life to happen to me. That's what I kind of convert in my own mind. I need to happen to life. So thankfully, I mean, I'm very grateful, because I really, really love my job. I love my job. I love my industry. It's really exciting to me. I love doing what I do. But, you know, there was a time where I didn't love doing what I did. In work for work, and don't doubt that lots of people are in that position, and particularly during the last year, during a pandemic that came out of nowhere and has affected every single person on this planet in some shape or form. I think it's a great time to question what we're doing, why we're doing it, what makes us happy, What are we getting out of it?
It also changes what we can do, because what you thought before was I had to be tied to my desk 5 days a week.
Thank you.
14 hours a day.
Thank you. I wish we were visually recording this, because the animated facial expressions that we have are amazing. I have said it for years. People should be able to choose to have a bit of a better work-life balance by working some of the time at home. I do understand that in some industries you can't. For example, retail. If you're working as a retailer in a store or care worker or an NHS worker or, you know, doctor, nurse, you know, in that industry, there are some industries where you can't work from home for the day. But the majority of office work can probably take place at a desk, as we've so proven, you know.
This is the thing,
I have had podcasts with HMCTS, and I've explained, I have in my law firm, Red Bar Law, we have had court hearings online that were set up in a matter of weeks, whereas before it's been in progress and it's in talks and it's, you know, being looked into and the process of being researched, and all of a sudden, bang, we were all there. So we can all do it. And, you know, I have chosen to be based from home majority of the time for years to try and get that work-life balance. But again, even with me, there's something I think that needs filling. There's a gap that needs filling. So obviously me and you are going to have a chat, Paul, after this podcast. I've already told you that.
But also I had a conversation with a bank as well. And they approached me and said, you know, we'd like you to do some work with our team. And then they were saying, I said, you know, how's it gone for you in the last year? And they're like, we never thought we could do any work outside the bank. Within 2 weeks, every single thing that the bank does is outside the bank. I'm like, secure documents, money, all like, yeah, everything.
It's amazing, isn't it? It's great.
If you think about how smart people are, you will be able to find a way to create a solution that works for your business, not having to be in the same office.
I get it. I'm completely with you there. And, you know, I've said this so many times in the last year, when I'm on the phone to people and I hear children in the background, they say, I'm really sorry that, you know, I'm homeschooling, I've been homeschooling, or I said, don't apologise. It's okay. That's life. You know, it's normal to have your children or your pets in the background. And I know there's been some viral Zoom recordings with animations that have popped up. And, you know, I was recording a podcast with a senior judge and his wife was doing the washing in the background, the laundry. It's fine. It, you know, on Zoom, of course, that's life. And people are so afraid of being almost human and allowing that to happen. And for me, I just think, let's just all relax a bit. Let's just all take a step back. Let's just all relax a little bit, because the more organic life can be in those ways, that's probably a very philosophical statement and I'm not that clever, but, you know, it just feels right to me, the better, the more happier surely we can be. But Paul, I want to quickly mention your new podcast, because you have got a new podcast that will be aired and will be aired by the time we air this, called The Psychology of Success. So tell me a little bit about that and all our listeners, please.
Well, you know, probably like every other Tom, Dick and Harry on the planet starting.
Don't say, no. I was really offended when I saw that on your LinkedIn the other day. I thought, what do you mean? Every Tom, I work really hard. We have had over 500,000 downloads of Get Legally Speaking. And I don't know every Tom, Dick and Harry that's trying to start it. So why have you jumped on the bandwagon then, Mr. Paul McVeigh?
I think it's because, and that's amazing, you know, the success you've had with yours so far, because it just seems like people are starting podcasts on every subject all the time. And it was interesting. I listened to Jay Humphries, who's the BT Sport football presenter. And he was on another podcast by a guy called Stephen Bartlett, who's Diary of a CEO. And essentially he was saying, you know, I was thinking about starting and I didn't know whether I should start it. And I had the same thought. You might have had that as well.
Well, my 13-year-old, well, he was 11 then, my son. And he said, Mum, do a podcast. And I said, what's that?
Exactly.
Literally.
But, and I just thought, okay, my podcast won't be for everybody, but if my background's in professional football and playing in the Premier League, and also this subject of psychology and how that applies to the corporate world, I think there might be some people who'd be interested in that. So what I'm doing is I'm trying to interview, and again, very fortunate to have some, you know, incredibly successful people in my phone book to be able to phone them up and just understand why they've been successful, but purely from the kind of psychological and mental performance perspective. Because I did this in the first lockdown last year when I thought, I don't really feel like I'm contributing to this whole, you know, pandemic. I'm staying at home and staying out of harm's way, but not actually doing anything. So I reached into my phone, interviewed about 25 people, all, again, from different backgrounds, business, sport, you know, TV, film, all the rest of it. And it was really fascinating, raising a bit of money for the NHS, but actually because the sort of the psychologist in me trying to understand and pick out the themes that kept cropping up in each interview, that successful people are incredibly successful, but they generally don't know why they're successful.
Oh, don't tell me that. They have to know why, because they have to give us the answers in the podcast that we're going to listen to. What do you mean? They mustn't. What, you mean they can't pinpoint the actual... Well, I can get that in a way, but surely, and you know, at my ripe age, I can say that I think success is probably part of a collection and a collective of actions, being in the right, also a bit of luck. You need a bit of luck, but it's not just one thing, right? So they couldn't have turned around to you and say, Paul, I was successful because I've got a fantastic supportive wife, for example.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly. So that's a great example. So I was interviewing all these different people. So even someone like Carl Frampton, who's just fought recently, he's been a two-weight world champion. And I'm interviewing him and I'm asking him, so why did you do this? How did this happen? How did this come about? And they can't always articulate why it happened. They almost just give you the nuts and bolts, the mechanics of that it happened, not why, what were the processes, what were the factors. And that was what really kind of shocked me. So this is why I'm trying to speak to more people, so we can understand and learn from these hugely successful people. But I think what's really interesting is you just talked on it, you almost gave a little definition of what you think your version of success is. And that's my first question on the podcast. Before we even get into anything about their life and what they've done, my first question is, so what is the definition of success? And it's funny because whenever I'm doing any keynote speaking or standing in front of an audience, and if I ever touch on the subject of success or someone mentions it, and I'll be like, oh, that's interesting you bring that up. What is the definition of success? And it's really fascinating when you hear people go, I've never really thought about it. Do you want to be successful? Yeah, I want to be successful, but so what's the definition of success? And they're like, and they start thinking about it, and then they just try and make something up on the top of the head, and they're like, oh, success is achieving your goals. And I'm like, brilliant. Textbook answer. That's what I hear so often, textbook answer. And I'm going, okay, and quickly throw it back on them. So what goals do you have? And suddenly they kind of go from looking at you in the eye to suddenly looking at the floor and kicking their feet, and they're a bit like, And this is the funny thing again, this is observation, having worked with so many people over the last 10 years. Most people have no idea why they're doing things. They're just doing them, because you just talked about being on this treadmill of life and not being able to get off it. So they're just doing it, but have no idea where they're going. And then I'll go in there, just try and do it really, really simple. Okay, how many people in the room or when you're speaking to someone have goals or targets for work? Pretty much everybody in the room, 100% of the people, KPIs, objectives, target, whatever it is. Brilliant. Okay. Different question. How many people have well thought out, well constructed, and this is generally the difference, Harry, written down goals or targets for your personal life? Again, all eyes on the floor. And this is what I find fascinating with people. So few people are actually sure what they're getting up in the morning for, working incredibly hard, because we're hard workers, you know, in this country, working really hard all week long and have no idea where they're going.
No, I get it. I get it. Listen, I'm signed up. The psychology of success. I'm signed up. I'm there. I'm on that. I'm going to be having conversations with you about that, because it's such a fascinating topic to me and so interesting. And it has such close links, as we were saying earlier, to mental well-being and to, you know, I always say living your best life, bringing out the best in you and those around you. It's so important and so key. Paul, that's all we've got time for.
No, don't tell me that. But I will leave you with one thing then.
Please.
It's interesting. This is how the circle of life works. That when I was 17, I told you I read that book by Tony Robbins.
Yes, Anthony Robbins.
When I was 32, so just over 10 years ago, I finished playing football. And that same year, I flew to Tampa, Florida to go and learn.
Did you go to a seminar?
Speaker. I went to a seminar first as soon as I finished playing in that first weekend. Then later in the year, I flew to Tampa, Florida to learn how to be a keynote speaker from an American keynote speaker who was charging $10,000 an hour. And I went to learn how to be a keynote speaker with him, and who stayed in the same apartment with me while we were both on the course. Tony Robinson.
Oh my
Jared
God.
Robbins. So my next guest at the end of April is Jared Robbins. So it's funny how this whole circle of life thing is.
Oh my God. Oh,
you can imagine growing
God.
Up in Tony Robbins' household is the most inspirational, and just by osmosis, just is such an incredible guy.
That is, that look, I'm envious. I'm not going to lie. Seriously, I'm not. I did look into, maybe a few years ago now, attending a Anthony Robbins, seminar to learn from him. But it's a lot. It's a lot to, it costs a lot. And you've got to be able to carve that time out of your life and say, right, I'm going to be solo. I'm going to go there. I'm going to do it. And I'm going to spend that money. And it's all for me. But I'm hopeful that one day, hopefully not too distant in the future, that will be something that I can do, because that would be an absolute dream for me. Really, it would. But Paul,
well,
thank you so much for your time. I'm going to say to you, you are more than welcome to come back and do more podcasts with me. I really, really, really enjoyed that, and I hope you did too.
Brilliant. Absolutely loved it, Patty. Thank you very much for the opportunity to share a little bit of the football world with
yes.
the legal profession.
Absolutely. You're more than welcome. And what I'll say to our listeners is, don't forget to click and subscribe to our podcasts. And you can find us on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn and YouTube by searching Get Legally Speaking. Also visit our website at getlegallyspeaking.com. Thank you for listening. Empower yourself today with legal knowledge and follow us on Instagram, Twitter or Facebook to get access to jargon-free legal information in plain and simple English. Today's episode is supported by Red Bar Law, the go-to law firm for expert, efficient and fast legal assistance, all at a fixed cost. Go to our website at redbarlaw.com. Our episodes are free to access. However, if you feel that you would like to support the children's charity that we are raising money for, then head over to our Just Giving page at justgiving.com and search for Hattie Savari, where we are raising money for orphaned children at SOS Children's Villages, one of the worthiest children's charities. Donate as little as £1 for a great cause. Thank you. Empower yourself today and follow us on TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube and LinkedIn by searching Get Legally Speaking to get access to jargon-free legal information in plain and simple English. Today's episode is supported by Red Bar Law, the go-to law firm for expert, efficient and fast legal assistance, all at a fixed cost. Go to our website at redbarlaw.com. With over 3 million downloads and counting, do not miss out on learning more about a topic that interests you. Go over to our website at getlegallyspeaking.com and browse over 100 podcast episodes. Empower yourself today with legal knowledge and follow us on Instagram, Twitter or Facebook to get access to jargon-free legal information in plain and simple English. Today's episode is supported by Red Bar Law, the go-to law firm for expert, efficient and fast legal assistance, all at a fixed cost. Go to our website at redbarlaw.com.